We're back to the Neil Haley Show on the education segment. Reminds me of the days of Toe Education Hour, and I am excited to welcome to the show Dr. Lester Close, and we're live here in Dallas, and he's the co-founder of nonprofit Gamer Wellness, and we are broadcasting live from the World Positive Education Accelerator Conference. How are you, Dr. Lester?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little about your background and why you're at this conference.
Yeah, for sure. So my background is in education. And so I worked directly in schools for around 14 years, 7 years of that as a school principal, before last year shifting gears to begin my own coaching and consulting practice.
Very, very interesting. So how's that change, shifting from, you know, pretty much, you know, being part of the system to now your own brand, your own thing? How's that shift going for you?
Yeah, so I am, you know, one of the areas I coach people in all the time is, you know, do what makes your heart happy, your heart sing. And for me, that was always people development. I love coaching. I actually still, even though I have my own practice, I still do work with some adolescents in crisis, just because I love working with kids and would never change that. But, you know, I get to now focus all 100% of my energy on people development. So it's kind of like a life you design.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's talk about this project called Gamer Wellness.
Yeah. So I my co-founder, who unfortunately couldn't be on today, his name is Dr. Bobo Blankson, and we always joke around. We call him the real doctor and me the fake doctor. And so my doctorate's in education. But Bobo, he works in adolescent medicine, so he's, you know, directly plugged into the wellness side of things. And Harvard graduate, Yale School of Medicine, you know, and very fortunate to have him as a friend and a partner.
Right.
But we're both very avid video gamers. And so when we speak with parents so often, you know, about, you know, the problem of video gaming, we love video games and are connected to the research around video games, and we know the many positives. So we founded Gamer Wellness to create educational opportunities for parents and professionals to learn about the many positives of video gaming, but at the same time to adult and adolescent gamers to create educational opportunities for them to learn how to game healthier, because our motto is game well, game great.
Very, very interesting. And that's the thing. When they go back, Dr. Lester, to all the research that's out there about how video games are so bad for you and stuff, a lot of times it's because of the type of games, wouldn't you agree? And then the overdoing of something. It doesn't matter what we do. If we overdo it, it's going to be a bad benefit for us. They don't study the people that do it in moderation.
Yeah, that's very, very correct. And it's great to go into an interview and hear someone have that perspective, because we usually have to shift it at some point, you know, and it's very, very true. I use the analogy of working out. I'm a very avid weightlifter, have been for 20 years. And, you know, but I've had periods in my life where I was out of balance. You know, I was lifting at the expense of something else in my life, you know, and I didn't have balance around it. And it was detrimental. You know, and the same thing can happen with video games or anything else. You know, if I call it transactional cost in my coaching practice, you know, if you're doing A at the expense of B, you know. And so worked with families and such and designing plans around that. It's critical because most of the times with humans, if you raise awareness of if you're doing A at the expense of B, if you're video gaming at the expense of sleep, you know, it sets off a cascade.
Yes.
In your life that's just negative.
Absolutely. And it's an interesting predicament when you talk about that, Dr. Lester, about the process, when you talk about the whole thing about sleep, things that are part of the study that they're looking at screen time, when ultimately I look at myself, if I didn't do video games, Dr. Lester, and I've kind of changed my tune, I wouldn't be able to do what I do today. I wouldn't be able to be the multitasker that I am today, even though it's called switching, not multitasking. I wouldn't be able to go and stay focused on a specific activity for a long period of time if it wasn't for video games. because I create everything like a game. If I'm trying to increase followers on my Instagram or Twitter or do it for clients, I could sit down and stay focused and get it done while watching television and doing something else at the same time, because I'm used to the process of video games. And I didn't overdo them, but I had the ability to focus for long periods of time on one monotonous activity, which video games shows at times.
Yeah. No, the research supports that. And so what you're saying is very founded. And, you know, there's just a plethora of research in all sorts of different fields, such as they found that surgeons who play video games make like 30% fewer mistakes in practice, which is, when you think about the critical nature of surgery, is incredible, you know. And, you know, even on the flip side, they found that playing video games, mobile video games, in 10 to 15 minute increments, so games designed around that short burst, relieve anxiety as much. And this was the study was done with college kids, relieves anxiety to as significant a degree as benzodiazepines. So there's just the positives are just out there, you know, but it just makes for a catchier headline to say violent video games promote violence, you know, and there's just, for every negative study you find, there's 10 positive studies.
See, why is that, Dr. Lester?
Yeah. You know, we could, that's a good question, because we could deep dive into the role of media in society today, but it's clickbait, right? Is the way I see it. Like, yes, there are studies that do show that there can be negative influences of video games. And if you really want to kind of get into why that can occur, I have a 10-year-old. I'm working with a family right now, and beautiful family, amazing family, great support system. But the 10-year-old has issues disengaging from video games. And the fact is, video games, they do stimulate your central nervous system. And that effect is more pronounced in a younger child. And so this 10-year-old can literally go into fight or flight mode when playing a video game. His nervous system is aroused. And so if a parent comes over there and shuts the computer when he's in the middle of a game that's so important to him, then he doesn't see his mother per se, right? He sees a saber-toothed tiger. And because he's in that fight or flight mode that we're hard programmed for. And so so that's why, you know, our approach is game smart, game intentional, game responsibly. So, you know, the advice we give parents is learn about the video games they're playing. Get down there and play with them. You know, if your child loves Fortnite, get down there and play Fortnite with them. So when you come to talk to him about, hey, it's one thing to approach a child and they believe their parents don't know anything about Fortnite and say, hey, you know what? Like, you can play for 20 minutes and come down and eat dinner with family. But it's very different when that parent has shown an interest in learning about Fortnite and says, you know what? Hey, play two one for alls, you know, play two maps, and then can you come down and eat dinner with the family? You know, one's empathic and one is seen as a conflict from the child's perspective.
Again, we're talking to Dr. Lester Close here live at the WPEA conference here in Dallas, Texas. And this amazes me because, again, Dr. Lester, I didn't get the chance to research this. I was thrown guests very quickly, but I'm able to
do that
when I interview multiple people every week. If you Googled me and saw who I've had on my show this week or in the last couple of weeks, you'd understand I can handle anything. And it's, again, I owe it to video games. That should be a quote I put out there. I owe it to video games that I can monitor and adjust and do things in a very quick fashion, question-wise, because what I can do is I can come up with questions in the top right after a follow-up question in seconds. And I've worked with so many people co-hosting and things like that, and they have to have everything written down. I'm able to just hit it. And I wonder if a lot of it involves creativity, involves video games, involves things. And you talk about surgeons and their ability to focus. Have you ever researched like people that are speakers, that are really good public speakers and are able to really handle stressful jobs? Does that come out again through video games as a
You know, I'd say indirectly, in the sense that it has been shown, you know, research has shown that video games increase the ability for someone to make quick decisions, to adjust their attention as needed, to increase problem-solving skills, critical thinking skills.
That sounds like what I do.
I mean, the research would absolutely support that.
So my question was difficult for you, but you answered it for me. So good job, Dr. Lester. You get a gold star for that, because what you basically showed me is that everything that I do as an entrepreneur is based on video games. So getting kids off tablets and saying, we're going to give them no video games, no tablets, and every one of our friends have the tablets and the phones and stuff like that, you would say absolutely that might not be the greatest decision.
Yeah, for two reasons, you know, and the first reason is that our kids live in a digital world, you know, so and to bring this back around to education, you know, for example, so our kids live in a digital world. So asking them to unplug from this rich digital world with all where knowledge is not a commodity, right? Like you have the phone and it has all the knowledge of the world in your hand, and we're asking them to unplug and connect into an analog world. It's doing them a disservice. But you know, the second part of that is why would we be surprised, you know, if some of our educational models are reporting lack of engagement? You know, we're asking them to shift from a cutting edge digital world to an analog world. And the second part of that is, you know, oftentimes when a child is struggling with balance with video gaming, there's typically a root cause at hand, you know, so anxiety, depression, trauma, whatever it might be.
Right.
And the video games can actually be a coping mechanism for them. So when the parents just strip the coping mechanism away, then of course you can have a negative response.
Well, fabulous. I think this is a definite great topic. Love to have a talk off air of how I can talk to you about, you know, how you're branding this and developing this, because again, you're now putting on the entrepreneur hat. I'm a former educator that's not an entrepreneur. I still tutor and consult education-wise, but most of mine's in other entrepreneurial ventures now. Where's the best place we can connect with you, Dr. Lester, about gamer wellness?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website, gamerwellness.org. And then if you ever want to connect with me directly, you can do so on Twitter at gamerwellness, or through my own personal Twitter at rebootplan.
Well, you're fabulous, Dr. Lester. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I appreciate you coming on. And you're giving me the one point you said when you said, I think it does, and you brought up all problem solving, thinking quickly, all these things. That's what an entrepreneur needs to be successful. They need to be able to make decisions quickly. They need to be able to look at a big amount of information and dissect it and come up with those problems. And that's what the most successful people in the world do. So let's not get rid of video games. We can decrease it so that they read more and develop analytical skills, but them have that time on those video games. So, Dr. Lester, thanks for calling. Best of luck with your non-prof. I appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Take care now. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Neil Haley's show. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley Show live in Dallas, Texas. I wish I was in Dallas. I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania right now at the World Positive Education Accelerator Conference. And my guests continue to be amazing. I'm first one with video games. That blew me away. That's something that the conversation needs to go out there. But now I have my guest. It's really, really another interesting topic. And a lot of it goes involving, now I think I could tell that we're going to go into more in a discussion about general awareness of positive psychology. Here's one of the things I'll give you my experience before we introduce our guest, is that a lot of times when we look at how we examine the brain, we miss certain points. We miss certain key factors why kids act like the way they act, or adults act like the way they act. And we need to look at things in different ways. And my guest definitely has that. So I'm excited to welcome to the program Amelia Zevotovskaya. Amelia, thanks for calling, and thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your background before coming into the topic that you're at this conference to speak about. Let's hear your background first.
Yes, my master's is in positive psychology, and my PhD work is in mind-body medicine. I came to this field with a passion to understand What does it mean to help people be happier, be healthier, live more fulfilling lives? And in particular, I was interested in the concept of resilience. I had faced quite a bit of traumatic loss when I was a child. I was actually born in Ukraine, immigrated to America when I was a young kid with my family, and had been always really interested in this concept of what separates people who face difficult life circumstances, and some people just seem to step up to the plate and, yes, and seem to persevere and thrive despite the challenges compared to people who don't. And so that's one of the many things that brought me to positive psychology and now to positive education as well, saying, how do we equip the young people in our world with the skills and tools that help them thrive?
I love it, Amelia. Here's the reason why. I've had some students I've tutored in high school and college and elementary school that have come from other countries, and they had variety of experiences based on what happened once they got to the United States, or even what they dealt with before coming to the United States. Some of them had attachment disorder. Some of them were able to overcome attachment disorder. So you're looking at specifically your experience. How did you overcome those things to be who you are today, and then led you to that journey? Because I want to know your personal journey to kind of show why you're trying to work on this involving positive psychology with kids. It's very interesting because you could have a horror story instead of this great success.
Yeah. Well, it started for me around the age 14. My brother passed away. He was 24 and I was 14. He drowned in an accident swimming. He was trying to save his fiance's life and she survived, but he passed away. And that was my first real traumatic life experience. That was like, I'm in a young adulthood. There's just so many transitions and being a middle school student, high school student. And I just remember that being such a pivotal point in my life and a pivotal point where I looked at what am I going to do with this situation? And at the time, my main reference point was what you see on TV. And it sort of said to myself, Amelia, this is the point in the story where the hero or the main character says, what am I going to do with this? Am I going to just become a miserable teen that's pissed off at the world? You know, I was pretty much already did that quite well from just being a teenager, I had to figure out a way to think about how I would carry my brother's legacy forward, how I would move it forward in the world, and how I would do the work that he couldn't do. And so I made a decision at that point that I was going to be a better person, and I participated in a lot of the programs that were available to me at my school, and it was the psychologist in my school that I say really saved me. I joined the bereavement groups, I joined the natural helper program, I joined the peer mediator group, and I became a leader in my school. And what I was doing, I was also working already at that time. I was 14, but I was doing children's birthday parties as a career path. And I really feel like I turned to people for support, and people would say things to me like, wow, Amelia, you're so amazing. You're so resilient. All the things your family has been through. My mom got sick and diagnosed with cancer. My dad, diabetic, just shortly after my brother passed away. And so this message of hearing frequently people would say to you, wow, you're so amazing. You went through all of this, and you kind of want to be like, I'm not that amazing. Trust me. If you were, just do what you need to do. But that was the question that kind of echoed in my mind for a long time. Is it just me, or is it something that we could actually bring to other people? And that's what drew me to the University of Pennsylvania to study resilience, study well-being, study life satisfaction, and then identify those skills and strategies that could help other people. And so it's kind of my story in brief, but this main idea was it a character trait? Was it just something that some people have and other people don't? Or can we actually train people in the skills of resilience? And of course, the science confirms, yes, you can. It's a teachable skill set and mindset that I now work to equip teachers with, equip business people with, coaches with, teachers with, because these are things that we can all learn and we can all utilize.
Now, Amelia, that's such a great story and how you overcame things. And would you say before that traumatic experience, I'm so interested in this, this is another fantastic topic again at the WPEA conference live here in Dallas, Texas on the Neil Haley Show, that I just am absolutely blown away by. Now, did you exhibit those problems before that, looking at, you know, the Ukraine and different things like that before your brother's passing?
No, I was always someone who had a fairly strong work ethic. I was definitely someone who was you know, it's actually hard to even say because I was a kid, right? So what do we do as kids? You know, I'm bored, you know, I'm like, I don't want to go to school. It was, but there was definitely an awareness of this idea that definitely as an immigrant child coming to America, I think one of the things I was very deeply ingrained with was a sense of gratitude. And I think that gratitude has taken me a very, very long way. And it's one of the main principles that I teach to my students that we run in our programs, the importance of cultivating a sense of gratitude. Because I think when you come to this country, you recognize the sacrifices that your family made in order for you to be able to do this. And therefore, with that, I didn't take it for granted. You know, so I definitely felt very grateful and that I wanted to maximize those opportunities that I was given and that my brother was wanted to be given that he wasn't able to since he had passed away. So thank you for asking me that question because I don't really think I've ever really thought about it in that way until you asked. But I definitely think that that has been a thread that I had even in childhood is like you don't take life for granted. You don't take opportunities for granted. You carpe diem. You seize the day. If someone gives you an opportunity to participate in something, you say yes.
Amazing. You're amazing for sure. And your story and yourself, you need to write a book on yourself and your story and how you overcame to come to that. So, hey, I got all the connections in that end because of my different things I do with PR and stuff. So definitely you'll have to contact me if you ever decide to have your story, because that's a fantastic story. So now let's go to helping these kids and looking at things. It's trainable to really look at teaching how to overcome, looking at the positive in life, really looking at these traumatic experiences and talking about them. But give us some specific ways that you're teaching at the conference so that teachers can understand this and implement this in their classrooms and also with kids that they're even seeing them one-on-one.
Yeah. Well, one of the most fundamental skills that we teach it to adults and we teach it to children, and we just teach it slightly differently, is what I call preventative cognitive behavioral therapy. One of the most effective forms of therapy is CBT, that when an adult comes in and they're struggling with anxiety or depression, therapists work with them to help them separate out what's happening in the moment from their beliefs about the situation and understanding that it's their beliefs or their thoughts about the situation that impact how they feel. It's a very basic model. It's been around for decades. This is it's a very effective model. It's one of the reasons why CBT is one of the most reimbursed therapies by insurance companies, is because we know this approach works. From a positive psychology perspective, we say, how do we teach these skills to people early on so that they can actually learn how to question their thoughts and their thinking on their own ahead of time, rather than waiting till they're depressed or they're anxious and they need outside support? Not that there's anything wrong with needing outside support, but how do we teach people these tools for self-care? So for children, we teach them what we call the EATER model, ETR. E stands for events, T stands for thoughts, R stands for reactions. And we teach children that while we can't often control the event that is happening, we can control our reaction, or take, as many people know, right, response ability, the ability to choose your response for your reaction by changing those T's in the EATER model, ETR, thoughts. And so we start to teach children, particularly around that age where they developmentally can begin to think about their thinking. They start to have this realization, I'm thinking that. We help them understand everybody has thoughts. Everybody has mind chatter. Adults have mind chatter. And we get them thinking about metacognition. What am I telling myself about the situation? Understanding that if they change the way that they're the story that they're telling themselves about the situation, they can feel differently. And so that's a very, very basic concept, but it really is the foundation to resilience, because resilience is about bouncing back and being able to persevere despite life setbacks. And what it takes for people to persevere despite those setbacks in life has to do with our reaction to the situation and has to do with the way that we're thinking about the situation. The difference between some people who persevere and other people who fall flat on their face and don't get back up is, what are they believing about their ability? What are they believing about the permanence of the situation? What are they telling themselves? And the more that we can think about our thinking and recognize that we have the ability to choose our thinking, the more resilient we will be.
It's fabulous. It's fabulous. And I remember all this from educational psychology when I went for my master's degree in Duquesne. And you brought up a lot of things about thinking about your thinking, teaching kids to really understand that. And such a teachable part of metacognition, isn't it? It's really what teachers use to have success in the classroom as well. And I think that really resonates at this conference, doesn't it?
Yep, Absolutely. We have an amazing group of educators and change agents assembled here, and it really just restores your faith in humanity that there are over 1,000 people who have given a week of their life to come together and say, how do we support the young people in our world in becoming more well-rounded, treating the whole child? It's really just such an inspiration to be here.
All right, fabulous. Best place we can find information on you, Amelia, and so people can connect with you and stuff like that. Where can they go?
Yeah, if you're an educator, if you're a teacher, visit us at positiveeducator.org. If you're a parent, an individual just looking for this work, a coach, a practitioner, check us out at theflourishingcenter.com.
Well, fabulous. Thanks for coming on the show, Amelia. Best of luck in your ventures. It's great what you're doing, and your story is amazing. Think about a book. I'll just keep bringing that up. Think about writing a memoir on your story, because the way you overcame and still have had such great success and how you're helping others, you're doing tremendous work. So thanks again for calling.
Thanks so much for having me.
Take care. Thanks. Okay. See you later. All right. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Neely Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're live here at the World Positive Education Accelerator radio event in Dallas, Texas at the conference. And we continue with great, great guests. And I'm learning so much anytime in education. I kind of miss it sometimes when you talk to celebrities or major people, they don't really educate you. But when you talk to my last two guests, and I know that my next guest won't disappoint, I'm excited to welcome the program, Nance Lucas. She is the executive director at the Center for Advancement of Well-Being and associate professor at George Mason University. Nance, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm doing great. There's no way that you could do anything but feel energized and hopeful coming off of 4 days of conversations around what's possible in education globally.
And I know I wish I was going to be able to come to the conference. One point I will. I definitely will cover it each year for sure. I have a lot of friends in Dallas, so I'll have to make plans earlier, maybe some family plans or stuff if it ever comes back, wherever you guys go next, because, again, this is a worldwide organization. But let's talk a little bit about, Nance, your background for us.
Sure. By background, I am a leadership studies scholar, and I have probably about 15 years ago forged the intersection of leadership and the science and application of well-being. An early mentor in my life was the late Don Clifton, and at the time he was the CEO and president of the Gallup organization. And Don had just launched the StrengthsFinder assessment tool, which is a self-discovery assessment that highlights, you know, what you're best at doing, so your strengths. And he took me under his wing and mentored me, and it forever changed the way I teach leadership, the way I lead myself, how I study leadership. His notion was, you know, philosophy of talent and seeing what's right about people and right about organizations. And I think that's an important principle for leaders to have as well.
I absolutely agree. And so you define leadership for me, Nance. I'm going to throw that question right out there. How do you define leadership?
I think that leadership is a relational process of people working collaboratively to achieve positive change, and using an ethic approach. And, you know, that definition is, you know, values oriented, and it's a definition in which a leader like Hitler would not fit in. So while Hitler had vision, he had followers, he wasn't attempting, you know, positive change in the world. And so that's how I define leadership, and we define it in a similar way in our book called Exploring Leadership for College Students Who Want to Make a Difference.
And that's an interesting point you talk about. That's how you define a leader, positive change. How many politicians are out there that can do that? It's very hard because they're only trying to please half a base, especially in the United States,
yeah,
with just two political parties.
Yeah, and I think today's, you know, unfortunately, I think today's national leaders are more transactional. They're not transforming leaders. In other words, they're not promoting these great ideal values in our country. Instead, they're kind of, you know, in the weeds at, you know, policies which no one seems to agree on, and it's not even resulting in any kind of real change.
It definitely isn't, and I think, but I think that's just the way that our nature of it is. When I look at leadership, I mean, think about educational leadership. We need it so badly now, Nance, because of the environment that we're dealing with in K through 12 education and how it's ever changing, and it changes in different ways. And the teacher is being, I wouldn't say attacked, but really put on guard, and the administrators are stressed out beyond belief. To put all that together, a leader with the time and effort, the principals and superintendents, and let's even leaders of certain of like the K through three teachers, or the middle school or high school, you know, where they're involved in some sort of leadership, they're under such stress that they don't sometimes ultimately know how to lead the rest of the people because they're under the stress of the people higher up above them. Nance, that's really a big problem.
Yeah. That's exactly it, and we're working to shift that mind shift of how we lead and how we create and sustain cultures in schools, at universities, that uplift well-being for all the stakeholders. So for the students, for the teachers, for the principals, all the educators, the school bus drivers, so the employees who are serving lunch in the dining halls. It's a systemic issue that we're dealing with, and this approach of positive education is not just what happens in the classroom. It's the energy that comes from that spreads. It's like a ripple effect into every aspect of a student's educational experience. From the moment that student gets on a bus, walks into a classroom, walks into a gym, goes to the principal's office.
Yes.
They are met with this approach of seeing what's right about you and seeing your great strengths.
Okay, so let's kind of really quickly, some tips for teachers right now. I mean, I guess administrators, I guess you're looking at this in so many different everyday ways of leadership, because teachers are leaders as well. How can everyone that's involved in education K through 12 become better leaders? Some three quick tips, because again, I could talk to you for hours about leadership and education and our gripes, but also let's come up with three good changing principles that people that could not attend the WPEA conference can go ahead and take from this interview.
Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, I think we have to model it ourselves. So we
yes.
have to walk the talk with this. So that's tip number one. So if we want to change the way we lead, we want to have greater balance in our lives, we have to practice these things. So that's the first tip. The second tip is to do what we can to focus attention, because I think we have an attention crisis in our country.
Yes.
So to really very intentionally, you know, if I'm having a conversation with you, to focus in, to lean into that conversation versus checking my phone five times during that conversation or
mm-hmm.
putting something up on Facebook, but to really kind of learn how to be present in our schools and with each other. So that's the second tip. And then the third tip is to take these everyday practices and just put them into place, because it doesn't cost any money to do them. So, for example, practicing gratitude every day.
Yes.
You know, to start your day with, you know, sort of three blessings or the one thing you're most grateful for, or to end your day that way. But to get the students to do these practices right inside the classrooms as well, to practice random acts of kindness. And they can be very small things, you know, seeing someone who needs help opening the door, you know, you're in a Starbucks line and just, you know, buying a person behind you a coffee. And these small kinds of practices are really then what leads up to larger scale changes in positive education in our schools. It starts with us.
I agree. And in this conference, you're trying to add that to people and really motivate them that they can do this and that it's going to be hard, but you're here for them, Nance, to help them in that process.
Yeah, and what's been exciting about this conference is really to engage in conversations and dream together with people from around the world who are committed to changing the frontier of education. In our work from these last few days at the WPEA Summit here in Texas, is really going to propel us forward to realizing a tipping point toward greater human flourishing in our lifetime. And there's a real yearning, Neil, to change, you know, how we define a successful educational
Good.
Experience by introducing well-being as one of those metrics. So, and I
well,
think
I
we
love,
achieve that through positive education.
I think that's fantastic, and I think it's great what you're doing, and where's the best place, Nance, we can find information on you and learn more about you, purchase your book as well, and all those things? Where can we go?
Sure. Just go to our website. It's wellbeing.gmu.edu, and you can also learn more about how our whole university, George Mason University, as a strategic goal of becoming a model well-being university for all of higher education. So you can see what we're up to around that initiative as well on that website.
Well, Nance, thanks for stopping by. Best of luck, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
Okay, great to talk to you, Neil.
All right, take care, Nance. See you later. All right.
Bye.
Take care, bye. You're listening to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley Show live here in Dallas, Texas at the World Positive Education Accelerator Conference. And I've been having a blast. I wish I could have attended, but I got the best of the best today. Thank you for the team lining up these guests and making something to remind me and giving me that urge of education. I still have education in my blood. It's still part of me, and that's what I do each and every day in any of my businesses. And the days when I was in the classroom, and I think that everything that we talked about is positive, and I hear that word positive in everything, and that's why it's the World Positive Education Accelerator Conference, or again, WPEA. And my guests continue to be very interesting, so I'm excited to welcome to the program Madison Kopeck. She's a senior at Chaplin College. Madison, thanks for calling. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Very, very good. So let's kind of talk a little bit about specifically your background, and we'll get right into it. And
okay.
Champlain, I forgot. I was reading it wrong. Champlain, how are you? So just tell me a little bit about your background, Madison, and why you're at the conference.
Okay, so I am a senior at Champlain College, as we've mentioned. I'm studying international business with a minor in organizational innovation. So I kind of grew up in a military family, so I traveled and have been to schools all over the world. And I grew up learning STEM, so the different mathematics, engineering, and
yeah.
Came to college and really took a liking for business and that different background and that different perspective and way of thinking.
So interesting. Did you think that you were going to get more involved and understand STEM and what you chose in education, especially when you talk, I mean, you chose in school involving international business and all that stuff that would lead into the STEM process when you first started in school? I doubt it, right?
No, I did not.
It's something that it's interesting how we evolve through our studies, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's kind of go into why we're going to talking about the topic is the discussion topic is how to incorporate appreciative inquiry throughout STEM programs. And you're doing that at Champlain and then how to further throughout the community. So talk a little bit about how we're going to incorporate this appreciative inquiry. Explain that a little bit. AI. Mm-hmm.
So appreciative inquiry is kind of, it's a different mindset. It's a different lens and way of seeing things. So it focuses on student people's strengths rather than the negatives. And it doesn't ignore the negatives, but it takes a different lighting on like what you focus on grows. So one of the ways that we can use appreciative inquiry in schools is that it teaches children to work on their strengths rather than their weaknesses. So given like tech and computer degrees, kids are sometimes good at relaying information through that, or they're simply, their strong suit is in the information itself. So the using their different strengths, they are able to really grow and develop, and it really helps the companies as a whole when everyone is using their strengths rather than focusing on their weaknesses.
So looking at strengths versus weaknesses, interesting process. And so what you're seeing is that a lot of kids, and you're looking at this, focusing again at your college, have difficulty with the understanding that the in technology in life, mathematics, integrating science and everything, and using that, incorporate appreciative inquiry to that. Does that make things easier to understand the program then of understanding science, technology, and math and all that stuff?
I think it's really overall about the well-being of the student. So when you're focusing on what you're good at, you have a lot more confidence and you are more likely to stay in school and pursue your degree. Whereas if you're constantly focusing on your negatives and not getting better and all of that stuff, you're more likely to fall out of the school path. And
yes, it's true.
Yes.
Continue.
So I think that's really where it helps.
I was definitely agreeing with you on that, Madison. And again, we're talking to Madison Kopack, senior at Champlain College, here on the Neil Haley Show, live from the WPEA conference in Dallas, Texas. And the thing that I guess you utilizing appreciative inquiry, we can utilize that not just in STEM programs, but anywhere in education and life, right? Because of the stress, what college students go through on a regular basis, and how lots of them do not make it through like their sophomore year at times, that the stress level makes them feel they can't do well, then they fail, then they get this mindset they're going to continue to fail, Madison, and then they pretty much are dropping out.
Absolutely. Appreciative inquiry is used all over the world in huge corporations, along with people's just everyday life. You can use them with relationships, such as with your partner. You can talk about what's going well in the relationship, and that really helps things grow. So when you have that mindset of the positivity and thinking about what's working, you can even, you can really help grow that, but also grow and develop the weaknesses, or grow, get rid of the weaknesses as well. So you can work on the weaknesses, but continue to grow the strengths.
That's really, really interesting. And Madison, so you're just, what are you planning after you graduate? You're very impressive for a senior, trust me, in what you're doing. So impressed, very impressed.
Yes, so I'm still figuring it out. However, I found appreciative inquiry my sophomore year of college, and it's really something that's resonated with me. So I'm really looking forward to taking that everywhere I go in life, whether it be my next career or my relationships and friends. And it's really helped me deal with that stress, because I've managed to get through some things that before, when I didn't have that ability to see what's going right, I have gotten through a lot of tough assignments, thinking about what's going well in groups and what's not. So I'm not sure exactly where I'm going to wind up, but I'm sure these tools are going to be helpful in my future.
Do you think, I mean, did you think, did you ever speak at a conference like this? That's got to be awesome too, really, in so many ways.
Yeah, I was working for the center, and my boss one day invited me. She was like, "You've done all this hard work to promote it. How would you like to go and attend?" And it was really amazing to see how all of the hard work of putting something like this together can really pay off, and all the people from all over the world putting in their input.
Wow, that's just fantastic. And I'm really impressed what you're doing, Madison. Again, this is international, and you're right. Putting a positive outlook, and even when things go wrong, that's how we improve. And I think that's why we don't teach entrepreneurship enough, because entrepreneurship is about a lot of falling. You fall a lot in entrepreneurship, Madison. So people try to get a job that's, you know, hey, it's safe, I'm going to stay there. But their satisfaction level, Madison, by the end is not very good, right? If they're in a job that just is like a day-to-day 9-to-5 job, there's no real stress, but their lives aren't fulfilled in a way. And
absolutely.
That's what you gotta figure out in mind. Yeah.
Definitely. And that's how the world is definitely shifting in a way where the careers are becoming more and more innovative. And so to be able to keep up with everything that's going on, you have to be willing to fail and learn from your failures and grow and develop them from there. And that's also something that is appreciative inquiry teaches you, is that failure isn't a bad thing. It's a learning opportunity.
And here's the problem that we run into. We have to get the professors and universities to understand that, you know, when we're failing somebody, we're not flunking them out just to get them out of there. We need to make it a teachable moment, sit down with that student, have a conversation, encourage them to move forward. Not, okay, you're done, I'm going to flunk you. Because that's the difference between a mentality in high school teacher compared to a college teacher, or even elementary teacher compared to middle school and high school, where we're not allowing that positivity as a way of growth. Yes, they never, a lot of them have never been in a position that they failed. And a lot of the people that they're educating are going to be in these positions where they've literally failed more than anything in the world, Madison, and they have to overcome that in a situation. Think of a doctor that messes up in a surgery, but really it's not a big mistake, but it haunts them. They lose a patient. Well, if they don't learn about failure, they're going to quit. Plain and simple.
Yeah, think definitely.
Think of that show, The Good Doctor, and how they show about how there are sometimes mistakes that are made. And I wish that we can look at that even in mistakes that our police officer makes, or mistakes that teachers make. Not, this was just a complete fault by just being incompetent. Things happen. We're human. And people have to understand that.
Definitely. And that's one of the things that positive education is really working towards, is finding a way to teach that failure to kids in a way that's beneficial to them and how they can learn from it. But it also doesn't make them want to drop out of school, for example. So that's something that positive education is really working towards, is a way that we can teach kids failure, but not in a way that will make them want to give up.
Okay, so best place we can find information, you, Madison, I guess, more about, you know, what you're studying, more about Champlain College and all that stuff. Where can we go?
You can visit Champlain College at champlain.edu. And to learn more about appreciative inquiry from the Champlain page, you can look up the Cooper Ryder Center.
All right, well, fantastic. You're impressive for sure. For just a senior, I see big things happening for you. So best of luck. And, you know, when you're talking about international business, you're ready to go. I'm sure you're networking to find that job when you graduate or go on to an MBA. But I see big things for you, because you really understand what it takes to be successful in life through, again, this inquiry. So thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're live here at the Positive Education Accelerator Conference here in Dallas, Texas, on the Neil Haley Show, and we have our last guest, and last we have to go international, right? Because if you look more into world, you got to go international, and that's the amazing thing of the WPEA. I wonder where you guys will be located next year for this conference, but I'm excited to welcome the program Larissa Lores. She is the CEO and psychologist and founder of the Positive Education Institute here in Brazil. Larissa, thanks for calling. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share with you a little bit about our experience.
Absolutely. And I want to kind of talk about, you know, this experience, because I'm learning more about positive education. And I really think that it probably would have kept me in the classroom longer. And a lot of times we need the teachers in our schools. I taught in Catholic school and public school, and really develop that positive attitude of how much they are going to shape young minds, Larissa, how important an educator is, and how important it is for us to be positive, because we're forming the world through education.
Yes, exactly. Actually, the positive education comes exactly to help teachers to learn, live, and then be able to teach and embed this in the schools, so that we can create an ecosystem of well-being all around the student to help really develop skills for life competencies.
That's amazing. I mean, and that's so important. Yes. And so let's just talk about your development of how you learned about positive education. How old were you, Larissa? And tell us that story.
Okay, so I am a psychologist and a AI practitioner of appreciative inquiry. I've been working with it since 20 years now. And so I learned about this positive education because of appreciative inquiry commitment to help it accelerate around the world. They really, David Cooperrider invited us to help spread the word and really help develop locally the positive education concept. And it was really something that caught my heart because I am a family therapist as well. And I could see both of my worlds, the organizational development world and also the families going together in this project. That for me, it's really something, because if we can teach each and everyone in the planet to really go and learn for, I mean, really learn one's own strength, and then yes, to try to be in the world as they really want to be, I think we will be helping to build a better world.
Absolutely. That's a great point you're making. And kind of going, I want to go really into the Positive Education Institute and what you do in Brazil and how you try to spread it throughout the world. But one point, as a teacher or as a parent, when you don't bring positivity in anything that you mm-hmm. do, you literally mm-hmm. are going to fail in some sort of way. Because if you don't yes. stay positive, even in the hard times, if you put it into your marriage, if you put it into, you're not positive in your marriage, if you're not positive in your situation, if you're not positive on your job, it really builds stress and it really hurts your health, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, exactly. Actually, we must learn how to really use our own energy so that we can contribute to ourselves and for the others. Really, to build positive relationships are the central of the PERMA model that Martin Seligman teaches us so well, how to really create well-being or really to work in the direction of well-being. So if we are able to really cultivate positive emotions, engagement, positive relationships, meaning and achievements, if we are really aware of this in our own lives, then we will be doing at least our part
yes.
of responsibility for a better world. So the science now explains that positive emotions can actually be learned. And if we know that it's skills that can be learned, I think we ought to really put it in education. Education should not be called only positive education, it should be only education, boldly, because actually we are talking about the best things we learn in up to date regarding education. So I really hope that maybe 10, 20 years from now, we will just call it education. We don't even need to say that it's positive education, because it's really part of our life, to be able to self-regulate and be at our best all the time for us and for the others.
So in Brazil, how do you bring this throughout the world, your institute, so people learn about what you do?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, we have been working on this program of positive education accelerator that uses appreciative inquiry to really call the voice of the whole to come and learn more about what it is and what it should be, and then to really invite everyone, all the stakeholders around education, to help build communities and systems that will really try to stress all the importance of positivity. So the way we did in Brazil, after attending the steering committee last September here in Vermont, Burlington, I went back to Brazil as an ambassador of this movement, really to tell people that there is something going on that we must be part of. And then I started by really building up upon my own strengths. I really thought what I could do to start with, and then I could really notice that I knew already a lot of stakeholders that could help me spreading the word. I started from where I was in my own strengths. I was a psychologist. I was an AI practitioner. So what can I do about it? And I started really building upon that. And then we were able to create an institute, a lot of people that were already working with social emotional skills and were interested in really improving education got together. And we invited Alejandro Adler, who is already doing this kind of positive education in scale all around the world, to come and talk to us and teach us how we could do it there. So people got really inspired, about this. So I think it's really important that we build upon the knowledge we already have to start with. And then we were able to come to this event here with a Brazilian delegation, around 30 people. We hope that once we are back to Brazil, these people that have been connected with the World Positive Education Accelerator will be able to replicate the model there, so that we will have our own summit and develop locally our strengths and our plans to build it there.
All right. Best place we can find information on you really quickly and learn more about you, Larissa. Where can we go?
So we have a Facebook address. You can just type Educação, Instituto Educação Positiva, and we will find us. Or you can just really, visit our site. It would be iebr.com.br.
All right, Larissa, thanks for calling. We are at the top of the hour. I appreciate you coming on the show. And thank you, World Positive Education Accelerator Conference, for having me. And take care, guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All the best.
You're welcome. All the best to you, too. You're listening to Neil Haley Show. We were live here at the World Positive Education Accelerator Conference. And take care, everyone. Goodbye.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.